Let me give a little bit of background as to where I'm coming from and as to what problem in my mind this little game slash activity that I developed was coming to solve, which I think will help. The problem is as follows. As was mentioned a couple times before me tonight, the primary mitzvah, one of the two primary mitzvahs, the two mitzvahs, Smida Arayis, that we have from the Torah on this night of the Seder is we have the mitzvah of telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim to our children. That is what the night is about. We are supposed to tell the story. Not only are we supposed to tell the story, but as the poskim write with the language of it, it needs to be told each person, kol echad ve'echad, kifi tzachot l'shono, each one according to his own or her own ability. So not only do you need to tell the story once at your Seder table, technically speaking, at your Seder table, you might need to tell the story 5, 6, 7 times because each person has to have it being told on their level in order to fulfill the mitzvah, which means some people have had the opportunity to learn in yeshiva, some have not, some are a little bit more life experience, some a little bit less. Everybody at the table has this obligation to tell the story. Now, I have always found this particularly troubling for one very simple reason. And that is, and maybe you or may not have shared this experience, getting through the Haggadah itself is hard enough at the Seder table with everybody gathered around, with the little kids and the older kids and the big kids and the grown-ups. Everybody wants something else at the Seder. Just getting through the Seder is, I think for most families, a challenge. It's hard. And some like to focus on the end and all the songs, and some have Divrei Torah on every single word in the beginning, and you can't even get to where you get started because this one's reading a whole book that they brought home from school. It's challenging. And then to say that you need to do this story several times, but really more than that, the bigger problem that I have is, even if you get through the Haggadah, I have always found I still haven't told the story. The Haggadah wasn't set up to actually tell the story. The Haggadah is set up to provide the structure for telling the story. But it doesn't really tell the story. It just doesn't. We know that when I should start and when I have to finish and how long at night I should tell the story and who was in what city when they were telling the story, and we have 4 children. And we do mention the 10 plagues that we mention, but we also discuss where they're 10 plagues at the Yom, or 50, or 200, or 400, or 600. We can go through how many different plagues were there, but we don't necessarily do a great job of telling the story. The Haggadah wants every head of the Seder table to tell the story, to actually gather their family and tell the story. So besides getting through the Haggadah, which is really, really hard, I had long felt that I just, even after I did the Haggadah, I didn't really communicate to my children in a story form, which is what we're supposed to do. And then there's an additional challenge. How many of us are actually good storytellers and are equipped to share this story with our children? It's a skill to tell a story, and one that you think you know and your kids think you know, and they're not rolling their eyes. Like, how do you tell the story in an engaging way that actually fulfills this mitzvah in a beautiful, fun way of telling over and communicating to our children and those gathered around our Seder table? How do we do this? That was a challenge. I'm sure I'm the only one who's experienced this challenge, but you're here anyway, so I might as well tell you my answer, whether or not you share this problem. Yes, does everyone know what I'm talking about? You share this problem?
I've never been there.
Never been there before, right? I figured. So I came up with the following. It's a simple game, but it's really not so simple. And I want to share it with you. My experiences with this have been phenomenal, and those who I've shared it with and have done it have similarly had a great experience with it. As you have in front of you, we have a game of bingo. Just for coming tonight, your door prize, I actually gave you all the cards you need. You don't even have to create them. You might want to redo them. It's really not hard. But let me go through how this works. It's simple, but there's a lot of different stages to actually fully be able to make this work as it is intended to. Okay, everybody have your sheets? Okay, so the game of bingo, everybody knows, works very simply. And generally bingo, so a person sitting in the front of the room, they say B26. And everybody with B26 puts a little thing on it. Very nice. That's not how we're going to play this game of bingo. You have in front of you cards. Each card in front of you is a different card. You actually have 15 different cards. So if you have more than 15 people at your Seder table, you know, you can make new ones or you could share whatever you want to do. But you have 15 different cards in your packet. Now, you, who or whoever's going to be leading the Seder, has the bingo answer key in front of you. That's in front. Don't give that one out. That's for you. That's for you, yes. Everyone see it? So now, on the left-hand side of your answer key are all the words that are actually in the bingo game. So burning bush is an answer to the bingo game. Shifren Pua, staff into snake, the white hand, public speech. All of those are actual answers on your bingo game as you see in front of you. Now the way that this works is, you as the head of the households are going to ask questions. And the answer, once an answer is given, then allows the person to put down their chip or their pieces of paper. You'll have one of your kids or grandkids cut a little piece of paper, whatever works to keep everybody busy before Pesach, on the game. So now, this is how it goes. This is how it goes. There are a couple different ways to play. Now, first of all, you have to understand why this works. The reason why this works, number one, is because human beings are competitive by nature. They are. And so you're thinking, like, no one's going to want to play. They will. Not only are they going to want to play, they're going to want to win. I'm telling you. I had a college, I had friends in Atlanta, a guy who was a business owner, and he had a bunch of people working for them. They were doing very, very well. But he had this game that he would play, this competition. It was a sales, the business was in sales. And he said, we'd have a board up as to where everybody was and their rankings. The prize was a $50 gift card to Starbucks. And these were people, the employees were making good money. But the $50 gift card to Starbucks, you wouldn't believe what these people would do to win. So people are competitive. So as much as you think the grown-ups aren't going to want to play, the grown-ups are going to want to play. Ah, my teenage boy, don't worry. And if you want to spice it up, which you should, get a few prizes. A couple of tchotchkes, some candy, chocolate, kosher for Pesach, of course, or whatever. And the winner, if you have that, that's all you need. I'm telling you, it's all you need.
Winner gets
Ikinios, you could do that. that would for sure work. Now, this is how this works. So for example, let me just look at the first. So you could either do this where every man for himself, everybody who's got a board, or you could divide it up. I have found dividing it up is even best. Boys versus girls, family versus family, depending whoever's at your family table, you can really play up on all of the family dynamics that you know that exist. It's great. So you can have this family versus that, like boys versus girls, this side of the table, that side of the table, or just do everyone for themselves. You know your table, whatever will work, it works. The key thing is also, before you even get started, you want to tell people you're doing this, not as a surprise. Meaning, I tell my family and my guests, I say when we start, I tell them in advance at the Seder. For Magid, we play a game for Magid, and we're going to take out, as soon as we do Avadim Hayinu, we're going to take out 20 minutes, 30, 25 minutes from our Seder to play our game, and then we zip through Magid to get through everything else. Because this is where we're going to fulfill the mitzvah of telling the story. It's going to happen right here. And I tell everybody, this is what we're going to do. And then after that, we're going to move until the meal. And then during the meal, everybody who has different Torah to share, that's when we do it, during the meal. And every kid has their packet. We do it during the meal. But Magid, this is Magid. And then we do the rest of Magid pretty quickly to get to the meal. Now, let's get to the actual game. How does it work? So I'm leading the Seder. So, okay, ready to play. Everybody has their card. Everybody has their chips. So I ask person number one a question. Question is as follows. Using my bingo key as an example, it was here that Hashem first introduced himself to Moshe. Moshe, and I could even have a second sentence. Moshe saw this and noticed something was wrong. Now let's say it's the boys, I do boys versus girls or family versus family, a boys question. So this goes to whoever, Shlomi, sitting in the... So that's what I ask. Now he's got to answer the question to be able to put down his chip. And my question was, this is the place that Hashem first introduced himself to Moshe. So he says... The burning bush, great. All the boys, if you divide it up boys versus girls, or if you want to do everybody, puts down a chip on the burning bush. Now you could do it where everybody gets to put down a chip. If one person gets it right, that also works because everybody wants to know what the answer was. You could do it so many different ways, all of that's irrelevant. The main thing is, I just asked a question at my Seder table, and I asked, this is where Hashem first introduced himself to Moshe. And somebody had to answer and say, the burning bush. Well, guess what's not otherwise spoken about at my Seder table?
Burning bush.
That's right. It doesn't come up.
Yeah.
But that's the starting point of our story. It's a starting point, certainly. It's now been introduced to the table because I asked the question where, now, without this little game, I have found it very hard to start just telling the story. Like, when do you do that? When do I talk about the burning bush? When do I talk about, it's hard to work it into the Seder because there's so many other things going on. I just worked it in. So okay, everyone says burning bush and everyone's looking for their card, they're putting it down. Now this is where the game is really effective. Now we've just introduced to the table, this is where Hashem introduced himself. I now have the opportunity, leading the Seder, to ask a follow-up question, which takes all of 5-6 seconds, but we're telling a story, and I could say, hey Shlomi, why do you think Hashem used the burning bush to introduce himself? Simple question. I just asked why. I just restated it with a why. Well, guess what's going to happen when I throw that question out? Someone's going to say a suggestion as to what's the significance of the burning bush. And we had a little dialogue that's going to take all of 30, 40 seconds. And then we go, okay, next. This doesn't happen otherwise. When else do you have a little conversation about it? Great. So we now just had burning bush. If I feel that it's okay, I can throw out a question of, well, why? Why is that significant? What does it mean? Okay, great. Next question. I go, Chana, these two Jewish girls had the audacity to defy Paro. Now again, my goal in asking these questions is not to trip up the kids around my table. I want them to get it right. I want them to get it right. I just want to introduce this to the table. These two Jewish girls defied Paro. Shifra and Pua, Shifra, great. Everybody puts down Shifra and Pua. And now if I find it correct, I add a follow-up question. Why is that so, why is it part of a story? What did that show? What trait did they have? Who is Shifra and Pua? What are their other names? Whatever follow-up you want, great. Whatever's appropriate. If you have a yeshiva guy at the table, I can ask a different question instead of, this requires preliminary. Add one more thing. This requires preparation. You can't just come with this. You need to know who's at your table and who gets what questions. And if you really want to do this well, you mark your questions, who's what questions are for whom. Meaning, I have a second grader who's not in a Jewish school. Well, you can't just go in order and all of a sudden they get a question that they don't know. They get a question that you can think about in advance. Even if you use the same card that I have, for example, one of the answers is frogs. Well, guess what? You know how many different questions you could ask where the answer is frogs? You could ask 1,000 different questions. So you just have to have in advance, these are the people coming to my Seder table, and I have marked off, when I get to so-and-so, I want to ask them a question, I want to engage them. So for them, I'm going to ask, what was the second plague? Or I can ask, what was the plague that was the noisy plague? Or what was green? You can ask whatever you want. And if you want to ask some advanced questions, so with a little bit of research, you open up a chumash, and you can ask some pretty tricky questions that the guy who thinks he's been in yeshiva, he's going to ask. You can ask some tough questions, just all a little bit of thought process. What happens through this game, as I said, people are competitive, they want to win, and you have the ability to introduce to your table the conversation. If you literally go through, even if you split this in half and you did every other one, you did it, I would recommend doing it in order because I set it up. This literally tells the story. And you've done it in a fun way, in a question and answer. And if you start from the beginning and you get to the, you've really introduced almost the entire story. So if you do every other one the first night and then do the other ones the second night, you've just simply introduced to your table a conversation. And you can have follow-up questions that are really very easy to follow up with and create dialogue and engagement. At the end of the day, what we're interested in is engagement at our tables. That our grown-ups, the kids, and everybody in between is engaged in a conversation about this story. And it's hard to do otherwise. But if you have a game, now you could do it. When do you win? So it depends. How much time do you have? How much attention do you have before you need to move on? One single row, great. Call it a game, move on to the rest of Magid. 2 rows, 3 rows. If it's going really well, the first person to finish their board. You need to know your table and how long it works. I am simply stating that by doing this, you can literally introduce to your table all of the necessary components. And with a little bit of forethought in advance, where you can mark off. These are my suggestions. If you find that these topics are beyond your table or too easy for your table, I think it's on your sheet, like bingo.net. There are 1,000 websites that for free, you plug in your words and they'll make you 15 boards. It doesn't cost you anything. It costs you 10 minutes. So you want to add in something else, and I highly suggest this. You want to add in personal family history. You have a parent, grandparent, or yourself a survivor, and you want to add into the Pesach story family history of where a family is from. Make up your own board. Add in a couple of points that is the answer is Bubby and the city where so-and-so came from in Europe or whatever day they came from here. Easy schmeasy. You do whatever you want. And you just plug it into 1,000 easy websites. You have your board. And it works as being able to do so. It requires a little bit of advanced preparation to know what you do. You want to get stuck asking a question to the wrong person, and you know everyone. You want it to get everything right. But it simply allows the conversation to go. And if you take it, you could either do it. If you don't like my suggestion of doing it during Maggid, you could just run through Maggid as you normally do, and during the meal. This is our mealtime game. Whatever works. You need to know your family, and you need to know in advance. You don't spring this on your family sitting around the table without them knowing it. Don't try that. That doesn't work. Because everyone's thinking like, this is so long, when are we going to eat? And then all of a sudden you pull out, you know, I got a game for everybody, and you start handing out cards and chips, and everyone is like, they're ready to kill you. But if you tell them in advance, I'm telling you, if you tell them in advance, this is how we're doing it. We're going to take 20 minutes, and we're going to tell the story through the game. And then we're going to zip through Maggid. It works. And it's a great environment. And again, if you play up the competition, you know, whether or not you do family, boys, girls, or random sides of the table, it works. It just works. And the conversation is there for you to have. So anyway, so I've given you 15 guards with a little, with a key. Totally welcome to do it. You go around the room, you ask questions, each person gets a question. The easiest is just where everybody gets to put down the chip when anybody gets the question right. Because that keeps everybody listening to all of the questions to make sure that they get it. But if you keep in mind, again, the main objective is to be able to introduce the conversations to your table. This is really, it's a great, great tool. We have found it very, very successful, and it works. I share that. Questions, comments?
Sounds great.
Any questions? Yeah.
Do you have to introduce
yourself
to Moshe and Bernie?
So I'm not going to answer that, and I'm not going to answer it on purpose. The purpose of asking the questions to almost every single thing you can answer, you can ask a follow-up question. Let's say you get to blood, and you can ask, why do you think blood was the first plague? You do not need to have the answer. Hashem commanded us, each and every person, to tell the story, not to become a Gadol Hador for the Leil HaSeder. You don't have to have every answer. You have to have a conversation at your table about this story. And it is not a problem if you throw out a question and say, why do you think the burning bush? And Aunt Susie has one answer, and Uncle Harry has a different answer, and you say, well, that's very interesting. We've now, if you happen to have an answer that you want to share, that's great. You want to have a dialogue about the story. You'll have answers, so sometimes the more you prepare, the better it is. But the fact that you can get your table having a conversation about what they think was the meaning of the burning bush is great. And the active, passionate dialogue is really the way that we pass on the story from one generation to the next. We give people a chance to have the conversation and to have the thoughts. This is my suggestion. If you really want to make it work, you got to know your table, and you go through the questions that I ask, and you think to yourself, is that the best way that I would ask? Maybe there's a different way you want to ask it. Without preparation, nothing works. But this is a great start to be able to do so. I highly recommend it, and I just wanted to share that as far as that goes. I promised too. I have a second one, but the second one's like graduate level work, and I have very little time left. I could quickly share it, but if you can't do two in 1 year, so if you think this will work, I tried that. It doesn't work. Like this, yeah, it's like too much. But then we'll do the next year. I'll show the other one. We'll do the other next one. Anyway, let me know if it works. If you want an electronic version, I can email you this. I highly recommend if you want to have your own personal take on it and add in certain things is also great. You just need to make sure that somebody has some chips. You give somebody the job of either cutting out little squares of paper or if you have poker chips or whatever else you need to make sure that's there.
Piece of matzah,
but not with, if you want to make it into kabrach, so you can do all sorts of interesting things with this to make it work. But just wanted to share that at the end of, really we had the first hour of real learning. This is just a little bit of fun and games to hopefully make your Seder table an engaging place for everybody. I have found it extremely successful. I hope you'll try it and give me some feedback whether or not it worked or didn't work. Come up with your own questions, come up with your own boards. It's all available online to make your own boards if you'd like. And thank you all for coming out tonight to learn and to hopefully make your Seder a more enjoyable experience for everyone in every level.